it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussion. I think there's really no serious momentum or discussion around expansion. We're committed to the traditional dates, but we've wanted to leave it as late as possible, leave as much flexibility as possible, hence the pushing back of that final selection committee meeting on Sunday the 20th, which is later than normal, to give leagues as much chance as possible to get as many games in as possible before that final decision has to be played. So I'm not expecting that the dates of the games will move back, and we're certainly not discussing expansion at this point.
That's Larry Scott, the Pac-12 commissioner, talking about the college football playoff. Andy Staples of The Athletic weighed in with a column asking why the Pac-12 conference is not pushing harder for an expansion of the playoff, and it's a hell of a good question. Andy Staples joining us. It surprises you that Larry Scott and the Pac-12 is not going more aggressively for an expansion, doesn't it?
Oh, of course. I mean, if you have a problem and there's a simple thing you can do to try to solve the problem, wouldn't you do the thing that would solve the problem? I mean, maybe you're not going to get everyone to agree with you, but at least fight for it.
When Larry Scott says, hey, we're going to play seven and, you know, the committee's going to have to be very subjective this year, I roll my eyes because I go, look, if the others are playing eight, nine, ten games, the Pac-12 just has no proof of performance. I don't think they're in the conversation this year.
They weren't in the conversation anyway. They could play 10 games and they wouldn't be in the conversation. If they're not playing any non-conference games to help break the stereotype that they don't play good football in the Pac-12, then the committee's just going to be going off those old stereotypes. So, again, this would be a reason you say, hey, just for this year, we'll do an experiment. Let's expand it so that the five Power 5 champs get in, highest-ranked Group of 5 champ gets in, and throw two at-larges in the mix. And that way you don't have to worry about there being no data points in terms of conferences crossing over, other than obviously the Sun Belt being much better than the Big 12 because they're 3-0 against them this year.
Andy Staples with us of The Athletic. What do you make of the Pac-12 being the last to the party, how that all played out from where you're sitting?
I don't think there's much they could do about that. One, we know they were going to basically follow the Big Ten and whatever the Big Ten did. The Pac-12's not a conference that's going to lead. They made that pretty clear. But also, they were the only one dealing with some pretty gnarly, you know, regulatory issues that nobody in the SEC had to deal with. Nobody in the Big 12 had to deal with. There are issues that people in the ACC and the Big Ten have to deal with, but it's not as challenging as what California and Oregon were doing, and that had to be overcome. Now, could they have asked sooner? It sure seems like it. It doesn't seem like California had any real contact with the Pac-12 until after those USC players put out that letter, which wouldn't you have... What I can't understand, and what they've not clearly explained, is you make the deal with Quidel, which is the rapid response antigen test company. That's on September 3rd. So that's the quote-unquote game changer. But then they didn't appear to do anything toward getting back to playing until the Big Ten decided it was going to play, which doesn't make any sense. Because why weren't they moving all along and, hey, I don't know, call the Big Ten. Be like, hey, you guys want to make this announcement together? We can get this figured out. But none of that happened. And I realized that the Pac-12 had the Oregon and California issue that the other leagues didn't. But it sure seems like they didn't do a lot of legwork on that beforehand. And then you had Gavin Newsom and Kate Brown last week saying, it's not exactly the way they're saying it.
Andy Staples of The Athletic is with us. I agree with you. I think, you know, they had the rapid results testing, and then some of the coaches kind of looked up like, are we coming back to play? And then nothing happened. In that window, Andy, this may not surprise you, Larry Scott did make contact with people outside the conference. He, in fact, steered Quidel to the Big Ten. And so the Big Ten then had rapid result testing. And then the Big Ten ditched him on the playground. It's a really bad look and a really troubling look.
Well, that I would put more on the Big Ten, though, because the Big Ten, through this, has been kind of going on its own. And that's not really worked out very well for the Big Ten either. You know, the Big Ten was the first to go out on its own on July 9th. They were the ones who said, we're going to go conference only. And while that clearly was a smart move, it was one of those where they had talked to all the conference commissioners had talked that morning. And Kevin Warren from the Big Ten did not say, hey, by the way, guys, here's what we're going to do this afternoon. And so that sort of got everybody off on the wrong foot. And so I don't know that I would hang that one necessarily on the Pac-12, because the Big Ten seems to really be kind of on its own here and not interested in playing well with the other kids on the playground.
The SEC programs will play a full schedule tomorrow with Georgia and LSU and Florida and Alabama, everybody playing. What's that going to feel like, and what's that going to be like to watch?
I would imagine it's going to feel more normal than what we've seen so far, just because there will be more games. It'll feel like a more complete Saturday football slate. As for what it's going to look like, I am curious. I am currently driving through Phoenix City, Alabama, on my way to Auburn. I'm going to Kentucky, Auburn. I want to see it. I mean, these are probably a lot more interesting games than the ones we've seen so far. Other than a couple, you know, Miami, Louisville comes to mind. But other than a couple, these SEC games are going to be the highest stakes, most interesting games that we've seen so far. And I wonder if it'll feel more like a normal football season once they start playing and once we start arguing about who's better and who's not. I don't know, because it's going to be weird. You know, you're going to have stadiums that are one-fifth full or less, and it's probably not going to look like what you saw. Like, Jordan-Hare Stadium at Auburn is one of the loudest stadiums in America. It will not be loud tomorrow. So is it going to feel the same? I don't know. I have a feeling if Kentucky and Auburn are close in the fourth quarter, we're all going to be locked in on the football and not worried about the other part of it. But it's still going to be weird at first.
Andy Staples of The Athletic, great follow on Twitter. You should read him in The Athletic as well, on college football and more, and barbecue as well. Can you get good barbecue right now? I mean, you're going down to the games. You won't have to compete with a bunch of fans at these places.
No. I'm curious about that, because so Bow and Arrow Barbecue in Auburn is a good news spot, and there's another one in Opelika, Alabama, called Butcher Paper. I bet I could walk right in, no problem. But the thing is, it's an 11 a.m. local kickoff, so a lot of barbecue joints don't open till 11. So I'm probably out of luck on that, or I need to go after the game is the best way to do it. Now, my question is, when you get these 9 a.m. Pac-12 kickoffs,
yes,
do you eat breakfast while watching the game? Do you grab coffee before the game? How does that work?
I don't want to see scrambled eggs at the stadium. That's the one thing. Is like, I have no use for that.
Scrambled eggs in a cup are the newest Austin Stadium concession. I'm ready. Well, there's no fans this year, so they can test it out and then figure out how they want to handle it.
Are 9 a.m. kickoffs, what's the advantage for the Pac-12? Because I'm against it, and then I start texting with coaches and ADs, and they're like, well, let me, you know, there's no fans. Is it that bad? I mean, what's the advantage that you see for the Pac-12 or disadvantage with a 9 a.m. kick?
Well, the advantage would be if you've got a big game and ESPN College Game Day or Fox Big Noon Saturday can roll right into it. That's the advantage. And because on the East Coast, we don't see any Pac-12 football until the middle of the afternoon. And it's great, and I love Pac-12 after dark myself, but it's hard when now that – I think it wasn't as big of a deal before Fox moved its best game to noon last year. You know, before ESPN used noon as the dumping ground for the games, we were joking, you know, when the games with no fans were going on, oh, it'll be just like a Purdue-Northwestern game on one of those noon kickoffs. They're always that quiet. So when Fox decided, you know what, why don't we roll our pregame show into our best game, that kind of changed the math on that. So all of a sudden you had really good Big Ten and Big 12 games running at noon Eastern, coming right out of the show with Urban Meyer and Reggie Bush. And so I think the Pac-12, which is a partner with Fox, could benefit from that in terms of exposure, just people getting to know the teams. Because, you know, I think, like Oregon last year, I think a lot of people, once they lost to Auburn in the season opener, they sort of checked out on them. Oregon was a blast to watch last season. They were so much fun to watch. But I think nationally people were kind of checked out on them. They can have their stories told. They can show up in a window where, you know, there's a chance they could be the best game in the window. Because the SEC is still not going to move its best game to noon because they have the contract with CBS where their best game is going to be at 3:30 Eastern. So you don't have to worry about that. The ACC wants its best games in prime time. So you don't have to worry about dealing with Clemson. You know, it's just a matter of the Big Ten and the Big 12 because Fox is just going to pick between the three leagues it has. But I don't have, if you got a great game and you want to show off those teams and there's no fans to worry about coming to the stadium anyway, I don't have an issue with that. I mean, I don't know that a bunch of college kids want to wake up at 4 in the morning to get ready for a game, but I think it would be a case where they would get a lot of exposure out of it. But, you know, I think it's up to them how they want to do it. If the coaches think it's a good idea, and I know which ones do. I know Mr. Kelly at UCLA has been a fan of this for a little while. I think it could be good for them. I just don't know if once you get fans back in the stands, is that something you want to ask them to do?
That's my fear. They're going to have me getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to head to Eugene. And, you know, I don't know.
High five's a nightmare on game day. What if there's an Oregon State game that day too? Whew.
Andy Staples is with us. What's the deal with the electronic whistles? That's been popping up. What's the problem there?
It turns out you can't hear them very well. I don't know why those don't carry as well as the old fashioned little, you know, wooden tee inside the metal thing, but apparently they don't. And that's one thing the SEC said this week, and then the director of officials on national level said, hey, you know, if the officials want to use real whistles, they can, just they need to stay away from people when they're blowing them. And it's one of those things where the electronic whistle solved a minor problem and caused a potentially major one where, you know, here's the situation. You need to blow a play dead. If you call a false start, you have to blow the play dead. You have to get everybody to stop. So you need everybody to be able to hear that whistle. So let's say you call a false start. Quarterback hears you and stops. Defensive end does not hear you and just splatters the quarterback. And all of a sudden, the quarterback's out for the season. That's a problem. So that's a much bigger problem than, you know, a little spittle coming out of a whistle that's 12 feet away from everybody. So that's why they said, okay, let's go back to the regular whistles because we can't have that happen.
Pac-12 has not been in this playoff. It'll be 6 times in 8 years. It'll be 3 in a row. You know, and, you know, they're not going to be part of this discussion. But you've got some players who opted out, particularly at Oregon. What should the NCAA do with a guy like Panay Sewell who opted out and hired an agent?
Let him come back. I mean, you're seeing Rashad Bateman in Minnesota try to do that and a few other players. Let him come back. It's an extraordinary situation. You know, nobody could have known how this was all going to shake out. On August 11th, when the Big Ten and the Pac-12 said, we ain't coming back in the fall, then how could these players have possibly known that they would? So if they want to come back and you want to have better players playing college football, which improves your product, you should let them play. And when somebody says, well, you let that guy play, you go, okay, there was a pandemic. It's a good excuse for everything. It really is. And it's one of those, I think they're afraid because they're going to set some sort of precedent. But there was a pandemic really does make a great excuse. It only happens once every 100 years.
I was talking about Chip Kelly, since you brought him up. I was talking about him with another colleague who said, have you seen a coach that had a rise and fall that mirrors Chip Kelly? He may be in some trouble at UCLA if he doesn't win. Petrino came up. We talked about, you know, maybe Tark going to the NBA or Lou Holtz, who had bounced to the NFL and then went back to college and had success. What do you think happened with Chip Kelly, and can he fix this at UCLA?
I still think he can because I think he's a very smart guy. and I think he can figure something out. But I think the success and the level of success was based on him essentially changing the game, creating an innovation within the game that nobody was prepared for, that took a while to catch up with, and that he rode to great success. And what that was is they changed the clock rules in 2008 to basically, instead of we're going to set the ball and then we'll blow a whistle and then a 25-second clock will start, to there's a 40-second clock and it starts as soon as the last play ends and you snap the ball whenever you want to. He used that to change everything in terms of offensive football. Think about basically every single team has copied him. And no one knew what to do with that at first. And, you know, defenses were just completely perplexed. And it took them a while to catch up. Now everybody does it. Now defenses have caught up. So unless he's got another paradigm-shifting idea, that's not going to happen again. That kind of success isn't going to happen again. But you can still have a really good team. You can still run the plays you run really well. He's just got to recruit to that and get a better roster at UCLA and then run it effectively. That's the difference. I think it's one of those, he innovated in a way that we haven't seen a lot in the history of the sport, and it's not easy to do that twice. I mean, it would be like, you know, the guy who created the option then suddenly going and creating the run and shoot. That didn't happen.
Let me ask you, you've been to a lot of stadiums. Best view from the press box. I'm not talking about the stadium, just the view.
Oh, everywhere else? Oregon's up there. Washington's up there. I'm trying to think of the because the bigger ones in the SEC, you know, they're little towns. You're not seeing a whole lot. Tennessee's great because you're looking out over the Tennessee River, and you got the, you know, the hills in the back and the Smoky Mountains in the background. I think Penn State's nice with the mountains, but yeah, and I like Tempe. I like that Tempe is just built into the side of a mountain. I think, and then you've got the city, and then another one is Georgia Tech, because how many just big time college football stadiums are dropped in the middle of a major city?
Yeah, love that. That's why we bring you on, barbecue and scenery. Andy Staples, I appreciate you, man. Drive safely.
All right, thanks, John.
All right, there he is. He's heading over to Auburn's game against Kentucky. And you notice how many Pac-12 schools he brought up. I said that earlier in the week. I said, I think the conference, what does the Pac-12 do well? It does women's basketball better than any conference in America. And it has views off the back of the press box better than any in America. He didn't talk about Berkeley looking out the back window towards the bay. He didn't talk about even Tucson. You look out and you see the desert and the sun setting in the distance. It's gorgeous. But some of the best views from the press box that have nothing to do with football exist in the Pac-12 conference. Forget the conference of champion thing. Just put best views from the press box as your kicker on your slogan. Leave it here. Our big splash is coming up. Story on Oregon Live this morning that caught my eye had the headline. Let me read this. Wells Fargo tells Oregon woman that she's dead. She says, not so. Yep, she's got a t-shirt on in the photo. It says, I'm not dead yet. Judy Kashner, who lives in Lincoln City, word of her death came as quite a shock to Judy herself. Her bank, in a letter last month, sent her a letter saying that she had been dead since 2019. We're sorry for your loss. We understand this is a difficult time for you, they wrote to her. She's 76, by the way. They were writing to tell her that credit card payments received after her passing would be applied to her account. If this is not your intent, please call us. She thought it was a joke. So she called Wells Fargo to fix the situation, and she got some bad news. In addition to telling her that she was dead, Wells Fargo also had taken it upon itself to tell three credit reporting agencies that she was dead as well. So she was in the process of refinancing her home. She later found out that because she was deceased, her income was not available to be counted as towards qualification for the loan. Situation ultimately got resolved, but she's still not clear how Wells Fargo got the idea that she was dead. They won't ask. They won't answer that because now they're scared. Judy says she's alive, she's okay, and she's got a shirt on now that says "I'm not dead yet." Would you guys? I am preoccupied with my own death. We've talked about that on the show, but I don't think anybody wants to read their own obituary, really, or get a letter saying "We're sorry for your loss." Like, you know, that's a misfire. You can't do that. And I know one thing in media that we all do. Like, everybody's in a rush to be first on stuff, but the thing you don't want to be wrong about in media is somebody dying. I always take extra time when there's a report of somebody who has passed away. Always want to get more than one source confirming that, or somebody with direct knowledge of the person's passing confirming that, because the worst thing ever is when a news agency, and it's happened, reports that somebody has passed and they're not dead. News report, so-and-so is not dead. Well, Judy, I'm glad you're alive. Judah Newby, what would you do? Get a letter from Wells Fargo that says you're dead.
Probably shred it. I don't know. I probably honestly wouldn't even follow up about it. Or maybe I'd frame it. Just be, you know, aware of my own mortality. Someone out there's counting me out. It's motivation.
Yeah, that's a good workout call right there. Put that on the wall next to your elliptical machine or whatever it is you're riding. Brings us to the big splash. It's the one thing you need to know today.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where? Down there. Must be
the big splash.
Larry Scott, Pac-12 commissioner, went on Fox Business today. He talked about no fans being in the stadium, but he added a caveat to that.
We'll be playing with no fans in the stadium, but obviously millions watching on TV. And that was another interesting discussion. You know, do you want to go forward even though fans can't be there? But first and foremost, our priority is...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but... if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.